This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Yes, I'm back again. Sadie's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back?
Final hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Coming up, the difference between the Celtics win and the Warriors win in the NBA Finals. Plus, we'll talk with Rick Barry, Warriors legend, coming up around 2:30 about the NBA Finals. And an SEC team did something I really like when it comes to a new coach, or I should say a coach's new contract. We'll get to that coming up. If you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand. Search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast. And you can always get in touch with the show at charlestonsportsradio.com. Just click on our show page and leave a comment for the show there. Get to us on Twitter at Morrow Middays. You can always text the show, 843-608-1734. Give us a call to join the conversation, 843-721-9500. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that today is a big and important day in our history. You know, June 6th, 1944 was D-Day, so it's the 78th anniversary, the huge day that we should remember and certainly do every year on June 6th. Doesn't maybe get the notoriety of some of the other days on the calendar or, of course, national holidays, but a very important day. D-Day today, June 6th, way back from 1944. On a far less serious or significant note, Friday, as we discussed on the air, was National Donut Day. Now, we were talking about, you know, getting that free donut, that best donut deal. The Krispy Kreme we have right down, just pretty much walking distance from the radio station, unfortunately, is closed down because of a fire they had, so hopefully everything's okay there. I decided, while I picked up some Dave Matthews wine on Friday, as I shared earlier, I went to the store for National Donut Day. And I got the donuts. I think they're the best donuts. I got the Enemans donuts.
Oh, yeah.
And I got to be honest. I've said this before in the show. I've never been a big fan of the powdered donuts. And then I had some of those over the weekend. I think the powdered donuts have won me back.
Whoa.
But the best one is that chocolate frosted donut.
I agree.
Oh, so good. And I think I love a Krispy Kreme glazed. I love anything that Dunkin' Donuts has. I'm a big coconut donut guy. Sure, I'll go do Duck's Donuts and get those desserts. But that chocolate glaze, you put it in the fridge or even the freezer, and you get a little crunch to it a little bit. Oh, so good. Now I got the pack where it was four of each. Four of the original old school donuts,
right,
which we're fans of around here. And then four of the frosted, four of the chocolate frosted. I wish there was more chocolate frosted. Those things were so good. I took down 12 donuts over the weekend for National Donut Day, so... It was pretty good.
I was going to say, how many hours did it take before that pack was gonzo?
I probably could have, I'll be honest with you, I probably could have put them all away in one sitting on Friday.
Yeah.
But I said, no, I got to space it out. I got to space out these calories and just the fat and everything, the sugar. But I think on Friday when I got home, because I haven't had those donuts in a long time. I don't go to the grocery store and buy donuts, the classic Enemans that you'll find everywhere. I don't know the last time I had one of those. I took down probably six when I got home. I opened up that box I wanted to open up in the car. I said, no, wait till you get home. You can actually enjoy them a little bit better than when you're driving. And when I got home, I ripped into those things.
The cinnamon ones, I think, that they have with a little frosting on there and some crumble on the top. Oh, my goodness.
Those are solid, too. That's some good stuff. So I know Krispy Kreme's great. You go, you get your fresh donuts. The best places also are legit donut places, not the chains. I'm sure there's donut shops around here that I'm not familiar with, but like growing up, it was a thing that when we go visit our grandparents, there was one down the street. You'd go Sunday morning, right when they'd open, you get the fresh donuts and bagels as well. You always get Sunday donuts, right? When you have that local store that all they do is make donuts or even bagels, you get a baker, those are the best. No disrespect to Dunkin' Donuts or Krispy Kreme because those donuts are solid. But that mom and pop shop that makes the donuts themselves, fantastic. But the M&Ms in the store that you get that are not necessarily fresh, they're packaged, those are so good. The chocolate frosted. Took them all down over the weekend. Happy National Donut Day. I don't know what other I have to stop. Whenever I look these things up, it always puts me in the mood.
Oh, yeah.
And then I think, I got to go get some donuts now. And then I eat 12 donuts over the weekend.
In a 24-hour span, you know. Well, I'm going to have to get that treadmill up another half mile.
That's right. I had to push it at the gym Saturday to make up for it. By the way, we'll get to the NBA Finals in a moment. But while we're on food, Arby's has introduced a burger now.
Yes, they have. A Wagyu burger.
Yeah. Mr. Bobby Harton saw this over the weekend. He even tweeted about it. Sure enough, today, first opportunity. Where did he go to lunch today? Went to Arby's. Got that burger.
Yes, he did.
He reported back that it was pretty good.
Yeah, that's what he said. He said pretty good. So I don't know how to gauge that on the Bobby Harton scale of foods, you know, because he's a big meat and potatoes type guy. Yeah. So, you know, how diverse is the palate? We shall see. But he said he really enjoyed it. So who knows?
I have always said Arby's is the most underrated fast food chain. And now they're introducing a burger.
Oof.
That's all they were missing. Because I'll be honest, nobody's going there for like whatever it was, the roast beef and cheddar.
Yeah, beef and ched?
like their cold cut sandwiches they give you. Come on. I get the chicken tenders. I get the mozzarella sticks. They're fantastic. Oof. They have some good shakes too, some milkshakes. Good stuff over there at Arby's. Curly fries. So underrated. And now that they have a burger, I'll be there this week. I haven't had Arby's in a long time. I haven't had fast food in a while. I'll be making an exception this week.
If you want to see Luke Morrow live, just head over to the Arby's around 6:30 today, and he'll be over there getting a burger.
Maybe today. So here's my thing. I probably have shared this before. The only time I eat fast food would be on a Wednesday because I go play basketball, as you said, and I feel so drained. I go play basketball for a couple of hours. It's the hardest I work at any point, even harder than like I work on the job. Like that's the hardest thing I do. I know I live a cushy life. I go play pickup basketball for 2 hours. I am drained. I want to go home and sleep. So I feel like, you know what? I did something good. I could go ruin it by doing something bad, eating fast food.
It balances out.
Yeah. So Wednesdays is the one I reward myself. I get fast food on Wednesdays, most Wednesdays when I play basketball. I don't know if I can wait till Wednesday. I may have to go to Arby's tonight.
It's just like, have a diet soda. It's much better for you right now.
That's right.
You need to dial back on the cows.
Yeah, of course. That's always makes everyone feel better. You get like 3 Big Macs, but don't worry. I got the diet soda. I upgraded to the large fries, but it's okay because I got a diet soda, so everything's good. It all evens out. Same idea here. Playing basketball probably doesn't even out with clogging your arteries afterwards at Arby's, but it helps me feel better about it. I'll probably go try that burger tonight. I'm getting hungry just thinking about it. Hey, the NBA Finals, we had Game 2 last night. So here's my big takeaway. The Celtics win Game 1. The Warriors win Game 2. The main takeaway is that when you look at how these teams won, for the Celtics, they won with a big fourth quarter in Game 1. For the Warriors, they essentially won with a big third quarter in Game 2. What can you count on moving forward? I think it's pretty clear that what can be repeated the rest of this series is what the Warriors did, what they accomplished in the third quarter, how they were able to win last night. And let's not forget, if it wasn't for that Celtics fourth quarter, and I know that's a big if, but the Warriors in Game 1 were so good in the third that they also had a double-digit lead going into the fourth of Game 1. They have led by double digits after three quarters in both of these first two games. You feel better about that. As I said earlier, it's like when the Heat, they led the Celtics 2-1, but everybody was pointing to, yeah, but they've only outscored them in three quarters. I would also compare it to my favorite stat in team sports, run differential in baseball or point differential in basketball or football, which helps illustrate where a team is maybe underachieved, overachieved, it can help try to dictate future performance. And similar here. Just like in that Heat-Celtics series, that when the Celtics fell behind 2-1, a lot of people weren't buying it because when you watch the games, you saw, yeah, but it's really only a quarter here. Overall, the Celtics outplayed the Heat. Same idea here. If it wasn't for that fourth quarter, the Warriors would be up 2-0, two double-digit victories, going back to Boston feeling good, and we'd be wondering, like, oh, boy, right, the Celtics, can they compete? They better win both at home. Now it's a 1-1 series. So when you look at those first two games, not only was it about the quarters, but then also the other part that we've been talking about throughout this afternoon is how do the Celtics win Game 1? How do they pull off that fourth quarter? Well, from the role players. Marcus Smart, who was terrible last night. Al Horford, who was invisible last night. White was still pretty good off the bench, but that's what he is. He's a bench player. Right? He's your like eighth guy coming in off the bench. But you knew those guys. They may have another game this series like that. Maybe not all at the same time, right? Al Horford will probably have another, you know, big game this series. Marcus Smart will have another couple of good games. but it's hard to count on them all playing like that together at the same time carrying you to a victory. And it happened in game one, and it was far from happening in game two last night. Those guys did nothing. Horford and Smart, when it combined 2 of 10, shooting the ball for 4 points after shooting it, you know, 60% in game one. You knew that couldn't be counted on from game to game. But what can be counted on is the Warriors in the third quarter, because the Warriors are the best third quarter team in basketball. They did it in game one. They did it in game two. For the Celtics, that fourth quarter comeback in game one was historic. We had never seen anything like that in the NBA Finals. That's how big of an anomaly, an outlier it was. That you can't rely on that or count on that moving forward. Al Horford had a historic performance. You can't expect that every game of this series. And that was my concern going into the series, that the Warriors are more dependable than Boston. Their star is more dependable and their role players. Jason Tatum has been far too inconsistent so far. But the most consistent player, maybe the only consistent player through the first two games, has been Steph Curry. Now, was he as good in game one after the first quarter? No, but he still put up 35. He put up 29 last night. He's the only guy that has had two good games to start this series. Tatum has been too inconsistent. And moving forward, I can trust, you know, Curry will probably continue to do the same. Tatum, I don't know what I'm going to get. It's like a roller coaster. Some nights he's on. Some nights he's really down. I don't know what I'm going to get from him each night. And the role players. I've been saying it throughout the afternoon, but when you take the two leading scorers for Boston and you compare them to the two leading scorers for Golden State last night, it was a one-point difference. So how do they lose by 20? Because nobody else did anything for the Celtics, and Golden State was far more balanced. They put five guys in double digits, and Draymond Green was six on the team and scoring at 9. So the top players for Boston matched the top players for Golden State, but they got no help anywhere else. It's hard to count on Jason Tatum every night. It's hard to count on those role players like Al Horford every game. I think Golden State's a little more dependable. Now, moving forward to Game 3, the Celtics have not lost back-to-back games this postseason. They're like a roller coaster. It's why they're hard to depend on. One good game, one bad game. I imagine at home, Game 3, first home game in over a decade for the NBA Finals in Boston. Place is going to be going crazy. I think the Celtics will bounce back. And then probably the Warriors will bounce back after that in Game 4. We may trade games the rest of the way here, or at least the next couple. Celtics will play good one night, bad the next, and then they come back, play really well. It's hard to count on them. But both teams can look at this series right now as we head to Game 3 in Boston Wednesday night. Another one of these, couple of days off, which I said on Friday, I'm all for it. It's fine. Make sure these guys are good to go for each of these big games. But as we head to Game 3, both teams can look at the glass half full. For Boston, you did your job. May not feel like it after last night. You come away, right, maybe with your tail between your legs a little bit. Golden State beat them up a little bit, especially Draymond Green. But if you're the Celtics going into that series or going into those two games, you just needed to win one. That was the objective, and they accomplished that goal. Now you head back to Boston. Did you play great? No, not necessarily. But you stole home court advantage. You won 1 out of 2. And if you win both at Boston this week, you're up 3-1. You're in the driver's seat. I don't know if that will happen. The Celtics have not been great at home, but they have the opportunity. And so if you're a Celtics fan, maybe you're discouraged by what you saw last night, but you look at that glass half full. The Celtics fan take is, hey, we win the next two at home, we're up 3-1. We're just fine. And if you're a Warriors fan, you feel pretty good that, yeah, you may have lost game one, but you have the momentum on your side heading to Boston, and you tell yourself, if it wasn't for that fourth quarter, right, we have controlled this series, which they have. Right, we could go win two in Boston. Those guys aren't going to play that as well as they did in that first game, and maybe they won't. But both teams, two games in, we're tied, and therefore, I guess both fan bases can look at this thing and say, yeah, we're right there. Right, if you're the Celtics, just win both at home. If you're the Warriors, hey, we just got to go win 1 out of 2. We've been clearly the better team. And I think as we try to predict or project the rest of this series, what the Celtics have done is not as reliable as Golden State. The only reason the Celtics have a win in this series is because of a historic fourth quarter that we had never seen before. That's hard to rely on. The reason why the Warriors put themselves in a position to win both games, mostly because of their great third quarters. And that's not some sort of shocker. They've been the best third quarter team all year. That's just what they do, and they have continued to do it against Boston. They just fell apart in that fourth quarter of game one. Maybe they took the Celtics a little light. Certainly didn't do that last night. Came out and roughed them up a little bit. Right, put them maybe back in their place. And heading back to Boston for Game 3 Wednesday night, we're all tied. But I think Golden State, just as I said going into the series, a little more dependable, a little more reliable. And what they've done so far to have success in the series, also more reliable than what Boston has done to have their success. When we come back, I like what an SEC school did with their coach's new contract. It's something I have said before in this show, should be part of college football. And at least one school is doing it. Hopefully it becomes kind of a new trend. I'll explain what I mean when we come back. The Mara Midday Show, right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Mara Midday Show.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. We'll catch up with NBA legend Rick Barry in about 10 minutes. But an SEC team did something I really like with their coach's new contract, and it's something that I've been wishing for, calling for here on the show even. I remember when Harbaugh took the pay cut at Michigan. That's what we were talking about at the time. And I liked the idea. And Harbaugh, I thought, had some good quotes about it, you know, where he accepted the pay cut. And he said something along the lines of, you know, we haven't been winning enough. And now that they did, they won the conference, they beat Ohio State last year, made the playoff, you get some of that money back. He gets a raise. So Arkansas gave Sam Pittman a new contract, their head coach, who's done a great job, much better than I ever anticipated. I wouldn't say mocked, that's too strong of a word, but when that hire was made, I thought it was crazy. What are you hiring an offensive line coach who's almost 60, first-time head coach? I thought it was ridiculous. He's been great. He has fed me crow since day one. And now it's been a complete 180. I'm on the Arkansas bandwagon. I think they'll be really good this year. But he got a new contract for his efforts so far. 5-year deal, $5 million a year. And what I like about this contract, a couple different things. Number one, a lot of bonuses are built in. Now, $5 million, that's still, you know, that's a good payday. That puts him in a good position in the SEC conference. It's not maybe Nick Saban money or Dabo money, but that's still good. Arkansas is making an investment. But he has a chance to make a lot more money because what I like is that there's a bonus. Every year he's there a little bit longer. He gets an extra $1 million added on, right? So if you're doing well, you hang around longer, you're going to make more money just simply by still having the job. And you would still have the job by being successful. He also earns bonuses for number of games won. Obviously, if you go to a bowl game, this or that. But for, you know, if you win 7 games, then if you win 8 games, you get this, that, yada, yada, yada. And then the other big thing, too, is that the buyout is still 75% of whatever's left on the contract. I've always complained, buyouts, it's a racket. It's ridiculous. The buyouts in college football. It's absurd. The agents have too much power or are given too much power in these negotiations. And you get these ridiculous buyouts, and then that dictates the decisions made down the road by these schools. Why Will Muschamp, for example, had to pay him $13 million to go away? Why? Why even put that in the contract? You're that worried about Muschamp? Are you that like desperate or insecure? You're worried about Will Muschamp leaving you? You have to put in that hard buyout? It's the power of the agents, obviously, wanting that buyout for the inevitable moment of when the coach gets fired. You still have to pay him a lot of money. It's a way to try to curb the firing. But anyways, I could go on a whole rant about buyouts. The thing with Sam Pittman is while it's a 75% buyout, if the team's under 500 when they fire him, it's only a 50% buyout. So the point in all this being is that it's very like performance-based. It's almost like, you know, a salesperson that has to thrive off of the commission. They get a base salary, but the commission's the big thing. Similar to coach. And this is what I've always said going back to the conversation when Harbaugh took a pay cut at the time. I think college football coaches should all be based off of this. You get paid based off of the number of games you win. That shows your value. Now, I know there's other ways to slice that pie that you could say, right, well, the football program brings in X number of dollars even if they aren't winning the conference, even if they aren't winning 10 games. They're still this valuable to our school or our organization. And he's the head coach. It is because of him, yada, yada, right? Agents, coaches, they can turn the conversation a number of different ways to try to show how valuable they are outside of just wins and losses. But Rob Parker always says sports is a short menu. It's about wins or losses. And you lose your job if you don't win enough. So I've always been of the school of thought, and it's never going to happen, but at least this is a nice step in that direction, that coaches' contracts should be like this, or even more than this, should be performance-based. You get paid based off how many games you're winning. We're not going to guarantee you that, yeah, you're going to make $8 million no matter what happens. And then when we have to fire you because you're not doing a good enough job, okay, sure, we'll give you 75% of your contract, even though you did a terrible job and should be fired. I think in college football, these guys' contracts should be based off of it. There was somebody who had the idea about when it comes to colleges, right, because tuition's getting out of control. And he said, let's do a study, and we'll see how much the graduates are making the first, whatever, 10 years, or if you want to do 30 years, whatever. Obviously, the older you get, the longer you've been somewhere, the more money you make. So do how much money the average alum makes, and then based off of that, that's how much they can charge. So if grads of, let's keep it local, if Clemson grads are making more out of college than South Carolina grads, well, then Clemson could charge a higher tuition. But you base it off of that. However, how valuable is our degree to you? Are you making more money when you come out of our school? Right? If so, then we can charge more. And I always like that idea. And it's similar with these coaches, right? Like, how valuable are you truly? Well, if you're winning us 10 games every year and we're competing in big games and you're doing your job and we're selling more tickets, right, you're going to make more money. But when you're winning only 4 games, if you're Jeff Collins at Georgia Tech who's won 3 games each of his first 3 years, your salary or contract should dictate that. And it's hard to ever take money away from somebody. But I think when the money, we're not talking about taking away your money so you can't feed your family. We're talking millions of dollars here. And I think these contracts have gotten out of control for these coaches, that they should be more based off of merit, off of your success with that specific program. Not what you've done in the past, not what you hope to do, but what you're doing right now. And if you're not winning, right, we're going to take some of the money off. And once you start winning, you're going to make even more money. I always like that idea. And Arkansas is doing that to a certain degree with Sam Pittman. Look, he still has a base salary of $5 million, right? So again, he's doing just fine. But a large portion of the salary is incentive laden that, hey, the more you win, the more you make, which most coaches are, of course. But Sam Pittman, I like it. So it's stacked for like each win you get, essentially. Once you reach, I think it's 7 wins he has to, right? You're not going to give him extra money for winning 4 games. But once you get to 7, all right, now at this point, every win you get, you're going to make a little bit more. I love that. If you're under 500, we have to fire you. The buyout goes down. You're not going to get as much money, right? Because you're under 500. There's a reason why we're firing you. It's based off of performance. So we're not going to have to pay you as much. I love this idea. I like what Arkansas did. I'm all over the Arkansas Sam Pittman bandwagon. And I like this new contract as well. I wish more schools would follow suit in college football. Hey, we were talking donuts earlier. Somebody said, what was it, Diddy's Donuts?
Yeah, Bradley, I believe, tweeted and said, Diddy's Donuts is an underrated donut shop.
I was looking at the photos. It does look pretty good. It looks like it's a food truck.
Yeah.
Which is always tough. I don't know. They have certain hours. They have a place. Some food trucks do it right where they have a nice little area and they have some tables to sit down. Who doesn't love donuts, though? I think there's certain things that are universally loved, like pizza.
Yeah.
You know anybody who doesn't like pizza?
I would hope I don't.
Yeah. Can't be friends with that person anymore. Donuts as well. Like, who does not like donuts? You may not eat them because they're not good for you. They're pretty terrible for you. I love donuts, though. But who doesn't like a donut?
These ones look like the small donuts.
Yeah.
Like the homemade smaller donuts if you're making them, you know, fresh out the oven. They're a little smaller, but I like that. There's another place in Mount Pleasant. I won't shout out the name, but they do small like craft donuts as well. They're pretty good.
It makes me feel better than when I eat 12 of those. Well, you know, they're small donuts. They're not full donuts. That's what I say to make myself feel better.
Yeah, just drink 12 Diet Cokes instead of 6 regular
Cokes.
Yeah,
that's right. That's right. Well, they're diet. I could have more of them. You know. So anyways, I had a walk to my car today. I can eat fast food. Come on. I got some steps in. I probably will be going to Arby's tonight. You ever pull the old Hertz donut move on anybody?
Ooh, no, I have not. I have not, unfortunately.
That's a classic. That's a classic prank. No, I never did. You ask somebody, you want a Hertz donut? And they say, what's a Hertz donut? And then you punch them and you say, Hertz donut? Along those lines. I kind of butcher that a little bit, but that's the old classic. The old classic prank you pull on somebody.
It's all about the delivery.
Yeah, exactly. And then you get to punch him, though. That's the best part. Hit him right in the arm. When we come back, Rick Barry will join us, and we'll talk about the NBA Finals. More Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. The Warriors even up the NBA Finals with that win last night, heading into Game 3 Wednesday in Boston. And joining us now, NBA legend Rick Barry, who played for the Warriors, won an NBA championship, was the Finals MVP. He's a Hall of Famer, 8-time All-Star. I could go on and on with the resume, but we'd run out of time. We got to talk with Rick about this NBA Finals. He's with us now. Rick, good afternoon. How are you?
Doing great. Every day I get up is a great day.
Yeah, amen to that. I appreciate the time. The Golden State Warriors get that win last night to even the series. When you look at Game 1 compared to Game 2, what stood out to you about Golden State's performance, the biggest difference from Game 1 to Game 2 that led to a victory this time last night?
They didn't lose their focus in the fourth quarter like they did in Game number 1. They stopped doing what they did to get the lead. They came out, took two horrible shots with nobody under the basket, and give credit to Boston. They went down, they scored, they cut the lead. The Warriors then got cold. They didn't turn it around. Steph Curry was sitting at the bench at the start of that quarter, and they blew their 12-point lead and got it handed to them. And just amazing performance by Boston. This time they did the same thing in the third quarter, got themselves a nice lead, and they didn't lose their focus and held on to get a victory and even the series. It's really that simple. I always tell people I don't pick and say who's going to win. I don't know who's going to win. If I did, I'd bet and make a fortune. I have no idea. I wouldn't bet a nickel on a basketball game. But the thing is, if you took an ideal situation and took the Warriors and the Celtics and both teams played their best game at the same time, the Warriors would win because I think they're a better basketball team. Now, that doesn't happen very rare. It happens rarely. And so now it's a matter of which team is going to go out there and perform as consistently and as well as they can on both ends of the court. And that's the team that will come away victorious. If you're a Warriors fan, you got to be thrilled that they won this game. And they did it without Klay Thompson even being a factor. So if Klay Thompson comes in and Jordan Poole plays well, which he didn't in Game 1, and Draymond plays his game, which he played well in this game but not well in the first game, they're going to be in good shape. You're the Celtics. I mean, you're going to hope that maybe, you know, the guys coming off the bench can play a little bit better. You can help that Smart plays better. I mean, he and Horford, you know, got 4 points in the last game, and they got 44 in the game before. I mean, so you know, how the hell you know what's going to happen?
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's why it's so interesting. Now, you just broke it down there at the very end of that answer, but which fan base, right? You know, the Celtics stole home court by winning one there.
Please, do me a favor. Please, don't ever use the word steal with me. I never stole a game in my life. You go out, you play hard, you earn a victory. The other team may give you a gift, but you don't steal anything in sports.
Well, okay, so then let's rephrase that. The Celtics took home court by winning Game 1. But the Warriors have looked like the better team overall, I would say, through the first two games. Which fan base do you think should be feeling better right now, just two games into the series?
Well, it's no reason that the Celtics fans shouldn't be optimistic. I mean, they just need their guys to play at the best of their abilities to have a chance to win, because they are certainly going to be at home and they have the home court advantage, but that doesn't mean a lot. The Celtics lost a bunch of games at home in the previous series, so it's not like they have a great advantage being at home. So the inconsistency is what pops its head up. And so who's going to play well in that next game? Brown didn't have a great game. Certainly Tatum came back from the 3-for-17 debacle that he had. But to his credit, and this is what I was always told when I was growing up, son, my father and also my college coach, if you're having a tough time scoring and shooting the ball, you have to find something else to do to help your team. You just don't keep jacking up shots and not doing something productive. He got the double digits in assist, and he helped them and, you know, to get a victory by doing that, to his credit. He had a nice game in this last game, but not enough. Didn't have enough support.
You mentioned
and they got to stop turning the ball over. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
They made some of the worst freaking turnovers in the world. I mean, there's 20-something point differential in points off turnovers. That was the major, if you had to pick one thing, that was the major difference in the game in Game 2.
Yeah, that's where the Celtics have gotten themselves in trouble at times this year, as we talk with.
Well, the Warriors do that too at times.
Yeah, I know. Well, whichever team's going to take better care of the basketball in Game 3 could stand a better chance, as we talk about the NBA Finals with Rick Barry, who played for the Warriors as a basketball Hall of Famer. You mentioned that third quarter for Golden State. They've been the best third quarter team. Now, the easy answer, we always say, well, it's just the coaching and the adjustments. But when you watch the Warriors and how they play so much better in that third quarter, what do you see for a reason why they're such a great third quarter team?
Well, because they have focus. Every coach tells you on every team I've ever played on, if you got a big lead, guys, the first 5 minutes of this third quarter are so important. We got to go out there and play as if we're even behind. We have to go out and do it. This team's going to give everything they have. Don't think just because we got a double-digit lead or something, we're ready to go. If the game's close, hey, we need to go out there, establish ourselves. First 5 minutes, third quarter. And so they stay focused. And then the problem with the Warriors and the problems with most teams is they don't know how to stay focused for extended periods of time. It's probably the most difficult thing for an athlete to learn how to do in any sport is to remain focused. If you're not focused, you are never going to be as good as you should be. In basketball, you'll be a half a step late reacting to things. A half a step in basketball is a disaster. You're done. I tell people I didn't have to get by my defender when I played. If I got him even with me, which is a half a step, I own him.
Yeah, that's a good point. The game has certainly changed. You know, Draymond Green is somebody that I want to ask you about, Draymond. If you're not a Warriors fan or a Warriors teammate, Draymond may tick you off. For you, when you watch these games or watch basketball nowadays, how important do you think it is for a team to have an instigator like that for Draymond that can get under the skin of that other team and can do some of those the things that most guys don't do on the floor, even if he's not scoring?
Well, it's nice to have a guy who shows up and focuses on the things that he can do well. The problem with him is he's so volatile at times. Thank God he's gotten better than what he was in previous times. I mean, he's lucky he didn't get thrown out of the game last night, which could have been a major factor. But that's him. I mean, and, you know, he has grown up some. He's gotten more mature, but he does do the little things that a lot of players don't do. And fortunately for him, they now are back to having a team that they have three guys when they had KD who can score 30 or more points for you on any given night. And he doesn't have to worry about scoring. He can focus on his defense. He can focus on his ball handling and getting assists like he does and rebounding and doing the things that he does so well. And so that's a beauty, okay? You don't need Draymond to score for you. And then when he does, you know, get 8, 10, 12 points or something, that's a bonus. So, yeah, a player like that is very critical to have. You have to have role players on your team, just like you have to have a bench that plays well. Why did Boston win game one? Their bench. Mm-hmm. It wasn't the starters. It was the bench that won for them. The two great performances by White and by Al. I mean, it was an incredible performance by those guys and the team in the fourth quarter. So that's what it takes to be successful. Again, it is a team game, and it takes a team to win.
Yeah, it's true. Talking with Rick Barry, who is in the Basketball Hall of Fame. You know, I've heard people compare right now this year of the NBA similar to the NBA of the 70s in that there isn't a super team, and you have a lot of good, talented players in the league that are spread throughout the league and a lot of good, maybe even younger talent. When you watch, obviously the three-pointer has changed the game now compared to the 70s, but when you look at just the shape the NBA's in right now, do you see any similarities to when you were in the league back in the 70s?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, I don't think there was any real dominant team back when we won in 75. There wasn't a team that just dominated everything. That started, other than the Boston Celtics, in years even before that. Then the Lakers and Showtime. And, then you got the San Antonio Spurs who were able to do what they were able to do. The Warriors recently are the team that's had it other than the two off years after the injuries and KD leaving. I mean, 6 of the last 8 years, they've been, the team that, you have to try to beat. So there is a similarity between them, no question.
What do you think when you watch the game now with how important or impactful that three-point line has become? Do you like the current state of the NBA?
Yes and no. No to the point that I think a lot of times it's way too much one-on-one. That's why I love the way the Warriors play. Both coaches that are coaching right now are influenced by Greg Popovich. And Greg Popovich had his team play basketball the way pass, move, cut, do the things, play smart, intelligent basketball. And both teams do that. So it's kind of fun to watch that. When they both get in trouble, too much one-on-one. Celtics, same thing last night. They did a lot of that stuff where they did too much one-on-one. They go in, they're forcing the ball into the middle, they're turning the ball over. I mean, you just have to play smart, intelligent basketball. And that's what the Warriors do, and most of the time the Celtics do it. That's why they're playing in the finals.
Talking about Rick Barry, who is a basketball legend. Now, I'm sure, Rick, you've talked about this many times, you've explained this many times, but I've never seen the origin story. I have to ask you about the underhand free throw. How did that come about for you? Because it was obviously so successful.
No, my father was a semi-pro player and coach, and he shot that way. He got me to do it when I was in high school. Thank God he convinced me to do it. I didn't want to do it. Girls shot that way, and I said, Dad, everybody's going to make fun of me. And I remember the words like they were yesterday. Son, they can't make fun of you if you're making them. And it's absolutely true. I mean, how do you make fun of somebody? I remember my first game I did it in high school. I was on the road in Scotch Plains, New Jersey. It still sticks in my brain. Guy yells from the stands to me. He says, hey, Barry, you big sissy shooting like that. The guy next to him, so clearly I heard it. What are you making fun of him for? He doesn't miss. And I was cool from that point forward.
Yeah, it's a great story. You shot 90% from the free throw line in your career, so I think it worked out pretty well for you. Led the league a bunch of times. Before I let you go, I do have to ask you, obviously you had the great basketball career. Now you have a second athletic career here in pickleball. People will give me a hard. You want to talk about being teased? People will tease me because I love playing pickleball. But I know you're all in it. What do you like so much about this growing game of pickleball?
Well, it's the best growing sport in America, maybe in the country, in the world. There's like 60 countries playing now. I've worked at it really hard to get to be good at it. I always try to be good at everything that I do. I've won national championships, U.S. Open championships, and two World Senior Championships. So I've gotten to be pretty good at it. It's a game that's it's so much fun. It's fast-paced. The volleys. I only play doubles, not singles. Too hard on my knee to play singles. But it's an incredible game. You get a great workout without beating your body up. I used to love tennis, but tennis was too hard on my body. And so pickleball, it's not the same. It's easy to pick up. You don't have to learn to serve overhanded. It's a much easier sport to pick up. And the demographic, more and more young players are getting into it. They've got kids that are teenagers, mid-teens, that are actually playing on the pro circuit right now. One of the best women's players in the world is 15 years old or 16. Anna Lee. I mean, it's unbelievable. It's a great game. I highly recommend people try it. They're taking tennis courts and transposing them and transferring them into pickleball courts. It's just an amazing sport that I think everybody should try. Let me get two plugs in quickly since I gave you this time. If the people want to take care of themselves, I use cannabinoids all the time. I mean, unbelievable safe. You don't have to do all the crazy stuff to take stuff that can get you in trouble and ruin your stomach. Medicileaf, M-E-D-I-C-I-L-E-A-F, medicileaf.com, put code 24, you get a discount. I use them every day of my life. And then GhostSleeves, S-L-E-E-V-E-S, GhostSleeves.com, and the code is RB24, and you'll get a great discount. It's got kinesial tape built into knee sleeves, calves, Achilles, elbows, amazing products. I use both all the time, especially when I'm playing pickleball.
Yeah, I can imagine. So check them out. And get out on that pickleball court as well if you haven't yet. He's Rick Barry, basketball legend, played with the Warriors, won a championship. Rick, appreciate the time and the insight and the stories as well, and enjoy the rest of the NBA Finals.
Yeah, I appreciate that. It's going to be fun to see what happens. Hey, one more thing, if you're at the pickleball, pickleballconnections.com. Check it out. You can get a free membership. Pretty cool. And join the business that I have in that. It's an amazing, amazing game.
Perfect. I'll check that out. I appreciate it, Rick. Take care.
All right, bye. Bye.
Rick Barry. Basketball legend joining us. Appreciate the time. He's a pro's pro. He's got to get those plugs in, right, as he said, if he gives us the time. By the way, stealing, I'm not going to get into it with Rick Barry, but I think the idea of stealing is more not about stealing that game per se, but stealing the idea of home court. When you win that first one, right, you take away that home court advantage over the course of a 7-game series, and now you have it in your back pocket. But nonetheless, I'm not going to tell that to a Hall of Famer. What do you say? Never stole anything on the court. He had over 1,100 steals in his career. Appreciate the time from Rick Barry. The other thing I like that he mentioned there is something I always heard growing up playing basketball. And I grew up playing, again, I'm old enough where it was before the three-point era, and so it was what would be considered now like the old-school tendencies and the old-school things that you would hear coaches say all the time. And I would always be told, growing up playing the game, like what Rick said, the most important minutes of every basketball game are the first 5 minutes of the first half, first 5 minutes of the second half. And it sounds ridiculous. You would say, how come not the final 5 minutes of the first and second half? And I guess, you know, Rick did a pretty good job of explaining why. And that's what the Golden State Warriors do so well. They come out of the locker room. Last night you saw Klay Thompson. Didn't do much offensively, but when he did, it was early on in that third quarter to help him get going. But that's an old cliche that all my coaches would always say, my father too, the most important minutes in a basketball game, first five of each half. Not the last five, but the first five. You set the tone. And Golden State, boy, do they take advantage of those first 5 minutes of the third quarter to really set the tone. That's what wins them games. They may lose the other three quarters. As long as they win the third, they're winning the game. And that was kind of the case last night where you remove, and again, it's a big if, but if you remove that third quarter, they got outscored the rest of the game, Golden State. But they are so good. They're the best third quarter team in the league. They do it every game. They've done it in the first two games of this series. They just simply win that quarter, and they win the game. They got outscored the other three quarters. Didn't matter. They still won an NBA Finals game last night because of how good they were coming out of the locker room. As Rick said, it's a lot about focus. Maybe that's the case. It can be hard. You go into the locker room for 15 minutes, right? Like you ever, as you get older, as I get older, when I go play my pickup hoops on Wednesday that I always talk about, sometimes we'll have a lot of guys, and so you may have to sit out a game. I never try to sit down, right? Because you ever do something athletic, and then you sit down for a little while, and then you try to stand back up again, and you're stiff. You can't get back out there and run. Your body's already packed it in. So I always stay up on my feet and just pace on the sidelines just to stay loose. Similar, you go into that locker room, and these are professional athletes, so they don't have that issue. But it's somewhat similar in the sense that you were just in the locker room talking about it for 15 minutes. Now you come out. It may take you a couple of possessions to get back in the flow of the game, just like when you come off the bench. It's hard to come in cold. And both teams are coming into the second half cold out of the locker room, and the Warriors evidently have that better focus that right from the opening inbounds of the third quarter, they're back locked in, ready to go, while that other team may be easing in to the second half after just coming out of the locker room. Appreciate the time from Rick. We'll wrap up your Monday when we come back. More Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
Wrapping up your Monday in the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. If you ever missed anything from the show, such as our conversation last segment with Hall of Famer Rick Barry talking about the NBA Finals, you can find that on demand. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast. You can also take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go. Just simply stream us online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Or through TuneIn Radio, your smart speaker, or our free app. Search ESPN Charleston in the App Store, and through the app, you can listen to the show live or on demand from anywhere in the world. It's free to download. Get it today, ESPN Charleston in the App Store. Appreciate listeners checking in from at least 10 different states and multiple countries on this Monday. On the text line, somebody asked about what if David Tepper owned the Braves. I'll be honest with you. We talked about this a little bit last week. I've soured on the whole David Tepper thing. He's got to prove it to me first before I'm a fan hoping he buys my team. Because it has not gone great with the Panthers. And as I laid out on the show, I think that was Friday, sometime last week, you look at all the other richest owners in the sports, they're doing pretty well. Even when sports have the salary cap restrictions. And when it comes to the Panthers, nobody's richer than David Tepper amongst owners in the NFL. And the Panthers haven't been doing so well. So he's got to prove it to me first before I'd be a Braves fan sitting there and like, man, I wish this guy would buy my team. I know the Braves because, you know, it's what, Liberty, they don't have a great ownership group either, but David Tepper's got to prove it to me first. Also, on the text line, asking which type of pizza, thin or thick crust? I don't discriminate. I love any kind of crust on my pizza. Trent, do you have a preferred thickness of your crust on pizza?
I would definitely like a thick crust, but again, I won't discriminate. If it's got dough, if it's got cheese, if it's got sauce, I'm good to go, you know, unless there's not any crazy toppings on the thin crust. Yeah, I can do a thin crust, but I find with the thin crust, Luke, I usually eat about 10, 12 pieces of it, true. And then, you know, I feel bad about myself.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point. But you tell yourself, yeah, but it's thin crust, so
yeah,
it's okay.
Exactly.
I'm all right.
Theme of the day.
Yeah. I like both, and I would eat both. In fact, I grew up in Connecticut, New Haven. Don't listen to anybody else. New Haven's got the best pizza around, and it's thin crust pizza in New Haven. But I like a good thick crust. Probably more often than not, I go thick crust. But sometimes, some places, they do the crust. It's too thick. It becomes too doughy. So there's a happy medium where I'd probably choose thick crust over thin, but it can't be too thick. So I sound a little picky here on my crust. But most places, it's hard to mess up pizza. I don't care what size the crust is. By the way, now I'm seeing these commercials. It's the old Parks and Rec idea that they had about the pizza inside the pizza crust.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's crazy, right?
Somebody's doing that now. They just came out with it. I don't know. Pizza Hut, somebody.
They do a lot of the stuffed crust, so yeah. I'm assuming it to them.
And I've been binging slowly Parks and Rec, and one of the early episodes, they had that idea that they wanted to put a pizza inside a pizza crust. Now somebody's finally doing it all these years later, and it looks delicious. Does Arby's have pizza? Because then I'm definitely going there later. In fact, I'm going there right now. We're done for the day. Life is a series of hellos and goodbyes. We have to say goodbye for now. We'll say hello again tomorrow at noon. If you ever miss anything from the show, catch it on demand. ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.